Welcome to Galactic Chat. My name's Alex, and joining me today is Amber Quay-Mulliner. Sorry for mispronouncing. Author of last year's The Interrogation of Ashala Wolf and its sequel from this year, The Disappearance of Ember Crow. Thank you very much for joining me, Amber.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Firstly, I must say that, of course, my introduction wasn't entirely complete because I missed out on a number of other books that you've written, like The Two-Hearted Numbat and Caterpillar and Butterfly. A character in one of my favourite comics called Saga has said that there are only three high art forms in the universe, and one of those is the illustrated children's book. Could you start by telling me a little bit about those books that you've written? I think you've written six or seven over the last few years, where your ideas have come from and that sort of thing.
Well, the picture books are pretty strongly drawn from my culture as an Indigenous person, and they're a particular type of story. And they're a type of story that we'd probably call a teaching story. So it's a story with a message that teaches you something about how to live in the world. Obviously, they are far shorter than novels, which would make them easier, harder.
I guess my next question really is, how was the segue from writing those to writing novels? But I guess really, was it a segue, or have you always written both? I guess, what's your approach to
fiction? I've always wanted to write a novel. I have a box full of failed novels sitting at my wardrobe. Completely rubbish. Yeah, none of them were finished because they were completely rubbish, so I quite wisely gave each one up. So I suppose I was always writing novels, even while I was writing the picture books. It was just that this was the first one that actually worked. I also think that writing picture books is hugely useful because it teaches you how to tell a story in not very many words, and that is just a really useful skill to have regardless of what you're trying to write.
Sure. Do you wish that you could have illustrated Ashala Wolf and Ember Crow, or are they not?
I'm not good at drawing people. Useless at drawing people.
Right.
So you'll notice there are no people in my picture books. It's all animals.
Oh, I hadn't actually picked that up. How interesting.
Well, there is not a person to be seen because I can't draw them.
Fantastic. That I'm going to tell all my students who don't like drawing anything. That's all right. Just skip that and draw everything else that you do like drawing. Yep. That's good. So I have read Ashala Wolf, but I haven't yet read Ember Crow. So for my sake and for everybody else who hasn't yet got around to reading the sequel, we'll avoid some spoilers. But I wanted to ask you about the inspiration for this series. It seems to me that it's basically written in something of a post-apocalyptic world, and you've got a lot of really interesting aspects in terms of how the characters relate to each other and relate to the world. So does this fall into the idea of a teaching story to some extent for you, or is it different?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose the worst thing that anyone could ever say about a novel is that it's educational. So, you know, they're not textbooks and they were never to be designed to be. That being said, because they're dystopian stories, I think any dystopian story is inevitably dealing with bigger issues because of the nature of what you're writing. So, you know, somehow the world has ended. There is this new society. It's clearly not a good society, or you wouldn't be writing about a dystopia. And so you're dealing with issues of, well, what went wrong? You know, how should human beings relate to each other and the world? What's right? What's wrong? And mostly in the context of a dystopia, how does your particular character struggle against whatever the injustices of their time are?
Sure, absolutely. And why choose to write that for a young adult audience rather than, which is such an annoying genre, I guess, or a label to put on it, but they do seem to be aimed at least partly at, I guess, a teenage audience. Having said that, in my 30s, I loved them. Was that a conscious decision to write for a slightly younger audience or to have younger protagonists?
Yeah, it was partly because I'm really not sure how I'd go writing for an adult audience. I think I tend to think in terms of a 16-year-old girl. Shayla is a 16-year-old girl. And that's how those books are written. I love talking to teenagers, and I do quite a lot of talking to teenagers. I connect with teenagers in a way I think I find it harder to connect with and speak to adults.
Yep.
And I think, too, that's probably because I taught for quite a while. I taught for 5 years at a university that has a young student body. So a lot of my students were 17, 18, 19. And I really saw the way that they were so flexible, so quick to embracing and absolutely stubbornly, defiantly refused to accept there was anything inevitable about anything they saw as an injustice. And so those are all qualities that Ashayla has, and I guess they're qualities that I associate with teenagers.
Yeah.
More so than adults, because I think as we get older, and teenagers have it, and they have that fierce, uncompromising passion for everything they do, and that's what's in the books, and that's what I think it takes to change a world, which is what my character will eventually do. So she had to be a teenager.
Sure. So you've said that your character will eventually change the world. How many books are planned in the series?
4 books in the series, so I'm halfway through.
Fantastic. Is the plan for them to come out 1 a year?
Yeah.
If all things go well?
Well, assuming I can keep it up, yeah, 1 a year. I have a full-time job, so I write around that. So I'm always, always running to meet a deadline, and I'm writing book 3 at the moment. Which, you know, it'll be done by the deadline. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
That's
in process, you know.
That's very good to hear.
But yeah, so I just work really long hours to get it sorted, basically.
Well, this is one of the questions that I think I'm not a fiction writer myself, and I often look at people who write fiction, and particularly people who manage to be basically holding down 2 jobs, writing and the thing that allows them to eat while writing. How on earth do you manage that, I guess, from a time perspective, but also from a mental perspective?
I think it's useful to be able to compartmentalise, so you have to be able to shift reasonably quickly from one thing to another, because you've got no time. So you don't have any time to waste sort of putting your job aside and then moving on to something else. You've got to be able to move pretty quickly. And then you just have to work in all the available time you have and use up all the seconds to produce something. In some ways, I suppose, I've heard a lot of people say actually that if you have more time, you just fill more time. So
yep,
there's some advantages to not having that much time, in that it forces you to be very efficient with it.
Do you think that you have always been efficient at using your time, or have you got better at that as you've had?
I've got better at it since I've been trying to squeeze writing novels around the job. and I was much more efficient writing the second book than the first one, and I'm more efficient now at the third than the second, because I've learned what I need to do to move things along quickly.
Right, well, that's fantastic. I'm glad to hear it for your sake. So you mentioned earlier your Indigenous heritage and how that had an impact on your children's books in particular. Has that had an impact on your approach to, narrative in general? Has it had an impact on the way you think about telling stories or the sorts of stories you want to tell?
Yeah, well, culture is, you know, part of who I am, so it impacts upon everything I do, and certainly there are Indigenous themes woven through the Ashayla book, and the way she interacts with the world and her environment is very much a reflection of the connection that Indigenous peoples have to their environment. She has that same connection to the first wood. You know, she is Indigenous, but she lives in a world where people no longer distinguish on the basis of race, so it's yeah, meaningless to her in the context that she lives. No one would understand what the word Indigenous meant,
yeah,
but she retains that connection to country that Indigenous people have now, and that connection to the ancient spirits of the land that Indigenous people have now. And I think we inevitably all write in some ways from the perspective of who we are, and so that features through the Ashayla books.
Yeah, I think as I was reading Ashayla, I was reminded of some of the books that I enjoyed as a child, particularly the ones by Victor Kelleher, mainly because I'm honestly not sure I read it last year, that's my excuse, whether it's obvious that Ashayla is set in Australia or not. But
it's actually not set in Australia.
Well, so interestingly to me, it felt very Australian.
Yeah, and the environments are Australian, but it's set in a world broke apart and formed a new continent. And so you've got these various environments, but I base them on Australian environments, mostly because I worked in environment for a long time with a bunch of environmental scientists, and so I couldn't bear to have an unrealistic ecosystem. And since I'm not an environmental scientist, the easiest way to achieve that was to pick an existing ecosystem.
Absolutely.
And make it a bit different, larger,
yep,
way bigger. You know, everything's bigger in Ashayla's world, so the trees are huge,
yep,
but the basis of the ecosystem is the same.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it's something that I've really appreciated in those stories and in a few other sometimes more fantasy-oriented novels that are coming out recently is that Australians are writing, not trying to place their stories in this faux European or medieval forest kind of area, but actually building on ideas of, you know, the sort of desert that Australia has, or mallee scrub, or the sort of rainforest that Australia has, rather than trying to go with what the rest of the English spoken English writing seems to be using, you know, the pine forest rather than palms or whatever.
Yeah, it's a really different type of forest.
Yeah.
So aside from anything else, it just makes your job hard, because then you've got to know that forest that you may never have physically experienced. Imagine the abstract. You know, far easier to write about the environments that you know.
Absolutely. No, I think that really came through too. So you're going to be, hopefully you find this is exciting, I think it's exciting, you're going to be one of the guests at next year's Australian National Convention in Melbourne. How are you feeling about that?
I'm so excited. And in fact, when that came out, I was like, I wonder if someone's going to invite me to a sci-fi thing. I really hope someone invites me to a sci-fi thing. And then when the Continuum invitation came through, I was like, yes, finally, I'm going. And then it's been a long time since the invitation and Continuum, so it's kind of been approaching for a long time now, and I've been working on my speech and trying to make it really good, so yeah, I'm just
fantastic.
So looking forward to it.
Yeah, excellent. Will it be your first convention, or have you been to some over in Western Australia?
I've been to as a participant, never as a speaker.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Fantastic. What are you hoping to get out of the convention, or what are you hoping to put in?
Look, I think there's a degree to which all speculative fiction fans speak a language, you know, a shared language, which other people don't speak. And in fact, you know, I think you're a real nerd when you start making sci-fi references that they don't understand. But I think the beauty of great speculative fiction, whether it's told through television or movies or through books, is that in telling tales of worlds that might be, it's actually always telling tales about the world that is. Yeah. And it's particularly terrific, challenging the injustices of the world that is. And I think that speculative fiction fans share a sense of the future and of what it could be and of the great possibilities of it and also the great pitfalls of it, the nightmares that could eventuate, because we've read them and we've seen them on television shows and in movies. And that's a really amazing thing, and I'm just really looking forward to going and being part of that.
So looking forward then, you've got obviously another two books in the Ashayla series to come in the next couple of years. Are you the sort of person that starts planning projects a long way in the future, or are you at the moment so completely in this world of hitting deadlines that that's not something you can think of?
No, you always have the stories bubbling away, and you just try to resist going into them too far, because you can't, because I've got to write the next two books. But I've got an idea for a three-book trilogy following on for Ashayla that's set 6 years later in the same world but with different characters.
Uh-huh.
And so if the Ashayla story is the story of how you win the war, then this next series is the story of how you win the peace, which, as it turns out, will be harder than winning the war. And then post that, I've got a giant six-book series I want to write, but to write that six-book series is a totally different world before I actually start writing.
Right, so it sounds like you've got enough projects to keep you going for quite a long time in that.
Oh, no shortage of ideas, just time. Time, energy and money, but lots of ideas.
That's fantastic. I do want to go back to something you were saying just before. You were talking about your having read and watched science fiction and so on. I know one of your biographies on one of your publisher's websites talks about you having been a fan of speculative fiction for a very long time. So I just wondered what some of the stuff that you enjoyed in your childhood was that helped to inspire you to want to write it yourself.
Well, my brother and I were always big Star Trek fans.
Nice.
Yeah, from the original series onwards. So we watched it right through. We have all the DVDs. Every now and then we take it out and we'll watch something from the beginning to the end again.
Very nice.
I'm particularly a Voyager fan. I just think it's great.
Yep.
So, and beyond that, Star Wars, of course.
Yep.
So the two things everyone grows up with. And then we watch everything else. You know? So at the moment I'm really enjoying Doctor Who.
Yep. Very
loved
good.
Doctor Who. Yes. Loved Fringe, which has sadly ended. So, you know, I'm going to have to get over that.
Yeah.
A little bit of a substitute X-Files too, because it was a bit like the X-Files, and I loved the X-Files.
Yes. You know?
Still take that out every now and then and watch it right through.
That's some commitment.
Yeah, a couple of episodes I still can't watch because I find them too frightening, but most of it I can watch. So. Right.
And in terms of recent fiction, did you read stuff by Australians or Americans or?
Well, one of my favourite series is Isabel Carmody's Obi Newton series.
Oh, aren't we all waiting for that last book to come out?
Yes, well, I was on a panel with her at the Perth Writers Festival this year, and she said that final book has got to be right, so she will write it until it's done really well, which I'm sure we're all grateful for because it's such a brilliant series.
Yes.
It deserves a brilliant ending, and I'm sure she'll give it a brilliant ending. So it was really terrific being able to meet her and be on a panel with her when I've been such a fan of hers for so many years.
Yep.
And beyond that, I read everything else. If it's speculative fiction, I've probably read it. These days, because I just have no time, I probably confine myself more to young adult just because that's the genre I write in. So yes. I try to know what's out there in that genre.
Sure.
And, yeah, the books just pile up waiting to be read. At the moment I've got a to-be-read bookcase as opposed to a to-be-read shelf.
Yes, I understand.
Staring at me right now, resentfully. There's nothing I can do. I don't have the time, so.
Yep, fair enough. So you've talked a bit about the plans that you've got in terms of stories and so on. Do you have big plans for the future in general? Do you want to move into writing full-time? Do you want to move into writing different sorts of novels, or are you taking it a little bit more slowly in terms of how you think about it?
I would ever write anything but speculative fiction.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that I really love, and these are the stories that I love. I don't think I'd ever write for adults, because I love telling stories to teenagers and I love talking to teenagers.
Yep.
Writing full-time, well, you have to make a great deal of money, which is pretty hard in Australia. Yeah, I usually say when I give talks, kids, you know, if you're thinking that you write a book and that's it, you know, you never work again, think again.
Yes,
you know?
That's right.
Yeah, you better be really serious about this, because your chances of doing that are very, very small in the Australian market, because we just don't have as many people here as they have in the United States.
Yes, very sad. When you're talking to kids, are you finding that kids are interested in hearing about your experiences and in literature in general? Are they engaged?
Yes, very much so. In fact, they ask. It's generally a rule that the audiences of teenagers will ask far more complex and well thought out questions than audiences of adults do. And I think that's reflective of the fact that if a teenager gets into a story, they really get into a story. They're also the people who notice any tiny inconsistency or anything like that, which means I think as a young adult author, you've got to be really on top of that, because teenagers will pick it out. And so they're very thoughtful in their writing, particularly the ones who want to be writers, but they're very thoughtful in the questions that they ask and the way they've thought about the story.
Excellent. And is that the biggest difference between talking to adult and teenage audiences, do you think?
I think teenagers are also braver. So, you know, I think we get less brave as we get older. And so I enjoy that from the teenagers, because they're not scared to ask you any question that's occurred to them, basically. Whereas adults will often be sort of a bit more tentative, a bit more polite. And, you know, be more concerned about how they're phrasing things. And teenagers really don't care that much. They're just interested, so they'll ask.
Yes.
So it makes them really fun audiences to interact with.
I have to say thank you so much again for agreeing to be interviewed. I have Ember Crowe sitting on my to-be-read shelf, and you've got me very inspired to go and read it this afternoon, actually.
Well, lots of big revelations in Ember Crowe.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask about that, so I should be kind of prepared for changes and for big things to happen.
One big revelation after another, and this is a thing that will only ever matter to me, because no one else would do this, but there's scenes in book one that you read differently once you know the things that you find out in book two.
Fantastic.
And I knew that when I was writing book one, so I was conscious of it in the writing.
I was going to ask that too. Have you got an overall narrative arc that you're working towards with all four of them?
I've got an overall arc. it's probably more accurate to say I've got a general idea. A general idea of what's going to be happening, but I knew the big secrets that were coming out in book two when I wrote book one.
Okay.
So I was aware of that when I was writing the scenes, that people's reactions were actually not quite what you think they are.
Sure. So you can do that little bit of foreshadowing, setting people up for the big reveal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very exciting. Emma, thank you very much again for talking to me with Galactic Chat. Good luck with finding the time to meet your deadline for the third book. Does it have a title yet?
The Foretelling of Georgie Spider.
Ooh. So we've had a wolf, a crow, a spider. Any hint for the animal of the fourth book?
No, well, the final book was, the epic battle. So.
Right.
Yeah.
That's very exciting again. thank you very much. I am certainly planning on being at the Melbourne Convention next year, so I hope to see you.
Oh, awesome. That'll be great.
And everyone else who is going to be there, you've been challenged, I think, if you're not a teenager, to come up with some decent questions for Emma. So we can show those teenagers up so that they're not the only ones who manage to be.
You've got
to
be pretty good to become as obsessed with a story as teenagers can.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, we've got some time. We can work on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.